I'd like to introduce our presenter, Lisa Lively Brooks. Her main claim to fame is belonging to the same church that Signe and I did last year in Eugene.
Is that Lutheran?
Yes, yes, naturally. You need a test?
Orthodox?
It's just Orthodox. Relatively Orthodox. She is the head of recycling for the Eugene School District, and 1987 was voted Science Teacher of the Year in the city of Eugene. And I will let her introduce. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks. You've all been promised a cookie tonight, but it's going to be one of those cookies that you really have to work to eat. And when Dan mentioned my coming here to do a session, I thought it would be a neat opportunity to do something with everybody, intergenerational, and have some of the kids get a chance to maybe build a base of experience for understanding some of the things that we're talking about. However, they all left town almost. So I'm going to have to ask that you put on the mindset of a child tonight. And I think that sometimes kids' stories are some of the best stories you can read. And I think sometimes when you can do some experiential things that it's just not all talking, but it's actually experiencing what some things can feel like, maybe it goes in a deeper place. So I hope so. This is actually pulled from a curriculum guide. A second grade teacher in Denver came up with this original idea, and it's been modified and changed a little bit. It's called How the Cookie Crumbles. You'll need to take a napkin, or else if you have some structurally safe surface that you can operate on your cookie in front of you, then you won't need I think you will. So just take a nap. And this is sort of one of those imagination things, and there are rules. Anytime you go into a classroom, you understand you have to always give these rules to people about when they can do things and when they shouldn't. So the rules to this one are, these may look like cookies, but they're actually going to be transformed into something else for a period of time. So while they're something else, you will not be allowed to lift them from the surface of the napkin, and because it will be entirely too heavy for you to do that. And they become inedible for this period of time too, so you can't cheat and eat early. So what you will need to do is okay, to set the scene, what looks like a cookie that's coming around to you is in actuality your earth. Okay, so this is an earth that is being placed in front of you. And the tan part of the earth is the crust of the earth. And the chocolate chips are your coal deposits. So the coal deposits are going to represent your energy resources in your world. Okay, so you need to sort of identify with this cookie as your world, so it's yours. And the first thing that you want to do is sort of get familiar with it. Being in a world, you can't pick it up and look on the underside of it. It's way too heavy to do that. But I'd like for you to just glance across the top of it and get an idea for how rich your world is. How many resources did you happen to end up with in your world? And we'll take a survey to see if this is a similar experience for everyone. All right, I hope everybody's had a chance to sort of get familiar with your world. And let's, how many people have five or less deposits showing on the surface? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. How many people have 6 to 10? Okay, many more. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. How many have 11 to 15? Whoa. 1, 2, 3, wow. How many have more, 16 or more? Anyone? Okay, so from the surface, just from taking a look at your world, you can see that the deposits are not, it's not equal. Some worlds are richer than others. Okay, the second part of this is, this is your world, and the people on your earth are in need of some energy. They need to light and heat their homes, and so you're going to need to extract some of the coal for them to use. Well, you need to mine your chocolate chip cookie. Remember that it's not edible until it gets changed. And make a pile of the chocolate chips in one section of the napkin, and you have 4 minutes to do that. And
you can't pick your cookie up.
Can't pick your cookie up.
Oh. You cannot pick your cookie up. Oh. Hand work.
Just your hand.
Just your hand. Well, no, no. You can use tools. You can. It's whatever.
There are
very few rules, except that you can't eat them, and you need to make a pile of your resources. Okay, all bulldozers down. Okay, take a look at what you've got in the pile now and compare it to how many you were able to count the first time you counted through. How many people have the same number as they did before they started mining? Okay. I would hazard a guess that you used a certain kind of mining technique. Did you? What was your technique?
The heat pen technique.
And or somebody else said surface. So you probably just mined what you could see.
We didn't drill.
Okay. And I would assume that everybody else here had a much greater amount. How many now have 16 or more? Last time, okay, we've got one with 16 here. Jackie, didn't you find 16 in there? You look very carefully.
She didn't have a cookie, too.
Oh, that's true.
That's half cookie, so that's double it.
Okay. How many have five or less still?
Five or more?
Five or less. Okay, not very many. 4, 5, 6.
So good.
One thing I'd like to say is that the results, I think, are a little bit skewed here. Usually if you do this with a fifth grade class or a fourth grade class, they all look like Jackie's. Very few of them.
Mine too.
Oh, I see.
Can't put it together again.
Well, if you were doing this with kids, what you would do would be make some charts and chart out what you found the first time through and what you found the second time through. And it usually, your results get much broader. There will still be some people who had, because of their mining techniques, they only found a very few. And then the other end of the scale will be increased greatly, because as people dig through and chop through and find their cookie, and some of their coal deposits get broken in half, so they double them. Anyway, your numbers get much broader. And at this point, there should be some people feeling very good. Who are the people who have like 14, 15, or 16. Who are those folks? Okay. And at this point, those are usually the people who are feeling very good about life, you know. Aren't I lucky? And see how many I have, and I'm one of those X's way on the other side of the scale. I'm doing very well. And then you say, okay, there's one more activity we do before it gets changed back into a cookie. And that is, you need to put your world back together again. Okay? And you've got 1 minute to do that. So
Susan, I want to watch.
Yeah. A miracle for him.
You don't have to put the coal deposits back into it, but you do need, you just need to reclaim the crust so that.
You're truly blessed.
Okay, how many people feel good about the world they've left behind? All right. There's a
Los Angeles.
Wyoming, maybe.
Once you have mined all the coal out of your world, and you go ahead and use that, burn it or eat it or whatever, the point is that. What is the point? There's no more. You've got a finite resource there. There were only a certain amount there. And if you chose to be the one to mine them all out, once you've mined them out, eaten them, they're all gone. And you can't, you know, you don't rebake your cookie again. It's just, that's all there is. So at this point, you would discuss a little bit about what that means and what that means for future. Are there any of those of you who think you may have left something for a future generation?
Okay.
All right. And for, I think a lot of times when maybe a company, if they've been given a goal to make money or to mine coal or whatever, they go about that single-mindedly without really taking a look at other issues, such as environmental impacts or what's left for the future or whether it's fair with what other countries have at the same time. But
Maria, you could do like third world countries over there.
In general, when the students, there are usually some very quiet students that are over in a corner, and when you tell them to mind, they look at their world and they look at you, and it's like, you know, this is my world and I can't do anything to it. And so if they mind at all, they very carefully cut out one or two chocolate chips and put it over to the side. And when the three people who have like 25 chocolate chips are sitting there with this grand look on their face, and they know that they've won the day, and then you say, okay, it's time to put your world back together again, they get this look on their face. Those, the big winners, they look like, but you didn't tell us all the rules to this game. And then the ones that have been sitting around the corner and just because they couldn't bear to tear their world up, they were, you know, willing to just sort of lose because they just couldn't do that. They start this slow smile that comes over their face, and they realize that they're the ultimate winners because they have a world that they can, the animals can live on, and people can enjoy, and the plants can grow back on. So that's just a real nice way to start. Students thinking about a lot of different issues all in one little cookie. But, so, That was mainly what I had to bring.
Could you share some with us about your position of recycling in the Eugene School District? What things are being recycled?
Okay. Eugene School District has had some recycling going on for 15 years, so it's not new. But it was one of those things that had its great day early on and then sort of waned. And then lately it's been a real large interest. My position as a teacher on special assignment, it's the first time they've ever had one for recycling and energy conservation, and it started last year. And I was a science teacher in the middle schools, and what I did with the position last year was I went around and located a person in each of the schools who was interested in starting a program, if they didn't already have one started, and helped them set up a program and helped them try to get the students as involved as they could in it. You know, it's a lot easier to say, well, we'll just have the custodian do that, but then the students don't have ownership in it. So in most cases, the students run the programs. And we recycle computer paper, white ledger, colored ledger, newspaper, magazines, cardboard in 39 of the 40 school sites in Eugene. And three schools recycle the tin. Four schools have community drop sites on their campus. They sponsor those for glass, tin, aluminum, cardboard, oil.
Plastic milk cartons.
Plastic can't be dropped off at the drop sites, but we did have three schools that were involved in plastics drives, where they would invite everybody to bring in their milk jugs on one day, and one school collected 1,000 of them in a day.
Is there a market for those?
Yeah. The clean plastic milk jugs, there's a real good market for those. That's about the only plastic that, besides PET bottles, that do have a market. You know, the liter bottles that have the deposit on them? Oh. In Oregon, there's the bottle bill, so that there's a deposit on every kind of pop or everything except wine coolers and wine bottles, just about, has a deposit. So you bring them back, and since they're already collected in large numbers, they can be taken and they grind them up, and they, I think they make them into flip-flops. You know, they can't be remade into food containers, but they can be remade into plastics. And enjoyed the position. It's real exciting to get these students involved. We've got some of them work so that each classroom has boxes in the room, and the students, each classroom sorts, and then two people go down and they dump it into one large place. Some of them work, the middle schools are so large they need to spread the work out a little more, so they have classrooms that work as companies and compete against each other to see how fast they can recycle a certain section of the school. And the high schools, two of the high schools, their handicapped classrooms do that as a job skill acquisition. And one of the schools last year recycled 22,000 pounds of paper last year. And they get all the income from it. So they made over $1,000.
Does somebody come to pick up?
Mm-hmm. We have a contract with a company. It's a different one from last year, but they come and pick it up at the schools whenever they have full 55-gallon barrels. They come and pick it up. Paper is no problem. The newspaper.
Yeah.
People are not crazy about getting newspaper, but we do have a contract, so we have a guaranteed price on it, since we have such a and this year my position has changed so that I'm just taking care of the program that was started last year, and it's pretty much running like clockwork. And then I wrote an energy incentive plan so that the schools get 25% of anything they're able to save on five utilities, which are electricity, fossil fuels, water, sewage, and garbage. So if they can save on those, then they get part of the payment back, and the rest of it goes into conservation into the schools. So that's been real exciting because it's the little money carrot that was needed to get a lot of people interested in doing conservation. And energy conservation in the district has been a real priority for about 5 years, and we've cut our carbon dioxide emissions by 25% in the last 5 years just by fine-tuning our equipment and becoming more efficient.
When you say they get 25% of their savings, was that against a five-year baseline?
We've got a computer program where we input all the bills, and we looked at it for since 1980 to find out, you know, what the patterns were. And last year was fairly representative, so we're comparing them against last year.
How do you save electric lights?
Turning off lights that are not needed. It's amazing. In schools, since you're not having to heat them at night, 30 to 50% of your energy used in a school is for lights. So what you have is people turn on the lights when the school's open, and they're on until the custodians leave at 10, unless somebody just happens to think about turning them off, and that's not common. So I train these little kids called Watt Watchers. And the thing that we did here is one of the activities I do with the Watt Watchers. And train them about what energy is, why you should bother saving it, and how to conserve. And they end up with these official little badges, and they give oops tickets and thank you notes, and they monitor their buildings once or twice a day, and just leave notes, you forgot or thanks for remembering, and with special instructions on how to say that nicely. Most of the lights are fluorescent. That's much easier to see. But there's still a lot of incandescent lights. It takes a huge hunk of money to get your lighting changed out, but it pays for itself quickly. So what we're trying to do is get the hunk of money to make those changes.
Is this self-supporting?
Yeah. In fact, it pays my salary, and it paid it last year. And it pays for a half-time person. And the district in the last 5 years has saved almost $2 million on their energy budgets just by having an energy manager who's been paying attention to what's going on.
How did you get your position?
The energy manager wanted someone to do the people end of things. He was real capable of tuning boilers and that sort of thing. And he felt like what was needed was the education end, training custodians, making the go-between between the technical aspects and getting teachers to do these things in their classrooms, getting the administrators involved. And so he lobbied for the position, and it was approved for 1 year, and then it's been added on for three more.
When you go from incandescent to fluorescent, what kind of, do you go to the regular standard fixtures, or are you going to the newer type of screw-in fixtures that are existing?
Well, as a stopgap measure, we can just screw in the fluorescents, the ones that'll screw into the sink.
I don't know if you noticed in the hotel here, we went to all screw-in fluorescents up there. A lot less money than putting in all 15 fixtures.
Oh yeah, it doesn't cost nearly as much, but we're also interested in doing the new super energy efficient ballasts, which don't use nearly as much electricity, and they don't buzz and they don't flicker, and that's what our hope is to, in the next 6 years, redo the whole lighting for all of the schools.
We cut down from over 2 kW to 200 watts.
Wow. That's super. And they last a whole lot longer, so you're not always up there changing.
Well, there's 26 watt, there's 213 watt bulbs in these fixtures.
Do those bulbs cost more than standard?
They cost $3.20 a piece. That's a 13 watt bulb. There's 213 watt bulbs in each fixture over there.
And they last a lot longer.
Yeah. Plus, when you've got a space like this where it won't be changes up and down, it tends to blow incandescent real fast.
On the savings that you're making, or obviously this program is paying for itself, where does the money come from? Is it mostly an electrical savings, or is it recycling money? How does that split?
The recycling money goes back to the school, so we don't take any of that. For example, Sheldon High School recycled the 22,000 pounds of paper, and they just get a payment directly for whatever they do. But the other side of that is that their garbage goes down because they no longer are throwing it away. So that's where, since we don't have to pay so much for the garbage, they get a 25% of the savings on that, and we get 75%.
Do you have any school buses?
I haven't even touched that end of it.
There's a lot of CO2 right there.
Yeah. the savings in the CO2 has been just through boilers.
What have you done on heat?
Real simple things that seem like, you know how your car runs much better if it's been tuned up? It's the same way with the boilers, and a lot of those boilers and boiler systems had been in the buildings for 30 years, and they had never had a thorough cleaning of the unit vents, those little boxes with the vents on the side that sit against the wall and people pile things on top of. Well, we got some crews to go in there and clean those out, and what they were doing, they were pulling out boxes of old Valentines, pencils, scissors, wads of dust balls, and you've got this hot water or steam running through these tubes in here, and then you've got all this dirt and stuff over there so that the air that's trying to pass through there has no chance of getting out, and that increased efficiency about 25%. So just cleaning the systems, we did changed out all the filters that were around to get more efficient filters, had the boilers tuned up professionally, went to a better quality of oil and had the lines blown out, just tuning them up. And then insulating, and I was appalled that there's still ceilings, empty ceilings that don't have any insulation in them. And we've got 40 schools. And they never had the money to do that. But they can't afford not to have done it either. So we have an insulation machine that blows insulation in and goes around. It's busy all the time. And it could be busy for 6 years full time.
Do any of the utilities down there have programs incentive programs going? Like Montana, you can get interest-free loans for insulating their houses and stuff. You can do energy audits through the power company.
There have been really good programs for residential and not any for commercial or schools, but that's changing. So now the residences, most of them have been insulated that are eligible, and now they're moving towards the schools. And we did get a $20,000 Oregon Department of Energy grant to do some of our programs. So that's helping a little bit.
Have you investigated the process of painting the windows to prevent the energy going out, the heat going out? Have you done anything about that?
No, the only thing we've done with windows is try to encourage people to use them for natural lighting. And we've had some problems with the schools having huge south-facing windows that actually the people inside just fry. And so they've been trying to, the obvious fix is to put in air conditioner. And so people will start talking about air conditioners, and we've put some solar shades on the outside that just take care of the problem. So we've been trying to do small fixes on that.
What are those?
It's a screen, a metal screen that fits on the outside of the window so that it stops the sun, some of the sun from coming in before it comes in to make heat. And you can still see out through them, and it's not visually unattractive, but it just keeps the, stops the heat before it gets inside.
I'm just curious to what you're using for insulation.
Fiberglass, mostly, blown fiberglass. No, the asbestos has been, actually it's been a real savior in a lot of ways because we have to go in and take it out. And when you do that, you can actually replace a lot of things at the same time. It's very expensive.
How do you know about taking it out?
We have a trained team of 8 people who, that's all they do. And they have the Tyvek suits and the special equipment, and yeah. So yeah, we chose to do that in district rather than having other people
you
come
have to
in.
Make it to school.
Well, you don't. You have to have a completely enclosed area, and they have to, what the things they go through. Plastic above it, on the walls, underneath. It's totally airtight with the air going in the whole time, and these suits that they wear.
Not the elevators. A lot of marginal contractors are doing that, and they're just doing it terribly. You know, they're cut rate price,
right.
Cut rate job. A lot of asbestos and no one's trouble.
Well, these guys, they're hired through the district, and they did that because they didn't want to have to trust anyone else. And I've been real impressed with the work they've done. They don't take any chances.
What problems do you have in the school besides energy safety?
Math? Art?
In terms of these ecological issues.
It's not a requirement. So it fits in when you have an interested teacher. So that anybody can teach environmental issues through anything, any subject. It's one of those things that fits in really well with lots of subjects. But environmental studies are not required. So when I can get a school interested in saving energy, then usually I can identify some teachers who are interested in teaching that too, and I'm always looking for those.
Dick tells us that Wisconsin has a requirement now for environmental education.
Super.
Starting in 1990. Okay. They're not geared up for it. So from a teacher's perspective, it's something else they have to do with no training.
Right.
So it's a real problem.
I'm amazed at Oregon.
Well, they don't have it as a requirement. And so it is, there are a lot of teachers out there that it's real important to them. So when they fit into their science, or they fit it into their math or social studies or whatever. But one neat thing is Earth Day is coming up, April 22nd. And National Earth Day is putting out a packet to go out, they want it to go out to all schools. And there are 3 lesson plans in there, K-12. One of them is multicultural, one of them is a science lesson, and one of them is an energy environment audit. So they're going to try to encourage every class throughout the United States to do that.
You might get on your watches to lobby for a field to get environmental education required in the state.
Well, luckily, the woman who's up for superintendent, state superintendent of the schools, is on the power planning council. So know that that is one of her priorities, so maybe something will happen.
Hey, luck with styrofoam. Me too.
They're recycling it.
They're recycling
it? Yeah. The plastics people, there were a couple of bans that happened in Oregon to ban styrofoam. And as soon as one of them passed, the plastics folks showed up en masse to lobby to not have it happen again. And they put up a whole lot of money to start a few pilot styrofoam recycling projects. And they're taking it and squishing it and making it into yo-yos. So, yeah, they densify it, making it into yo-yos and outdoor plastic logs for building. So it sort of took the oomph out of banning styrofoam. Most of them are not using CFCs in the making of it. They're using butane. So it's no longer, and you have the test to find out is about $100 a piece. So it's not something that you can just do easily. There's a fellow at the University of Oregon in the chemistry department, Paul Engelking, who it's one of his personal fights, and he was for a long time doing these studies, and he had checked out the McDonald's, and yes, as of a year ago, they still had CFCs in some of their cups. But they've started using butane, and the test to tell the difference between butane and CFC for some reason is it's a very expensive test, $100 a shot, so it's hard to tell. If you take a look at styrofoam and if you look real close and it looks like a beehive has a little, you know what I'm talking about? That means that they were squished together and it did not have a foaming agent. So those are okay as far as CFCs for sure. If you look at it and it's real smooth and it looks like whipped cream, those had to be inflated with a foaming agent. And the foaming agent can be CFCs or it can be butane. So most people are saying they're using butane, but they are not.
So what's an example of I don't understand the beehive. What
most coffee cups that you get, if you take a look at it, it's very, very small. It looks like little beads were smashed together, and that, in fact, is how they're made. There are little particles of styrofoam that are like little pellets that are shot out of a machine, and then they squash them together to make the cup.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at them, it has a little net look to it.
They're not CFCs.
No CFCs.
What are they
made? They're made of polystyrene, but yeah, it's just squashed together. The main kind of styrofoam that you want to be careful of is the kind that you get stereo boxes, and there's this foaming material that you put you squirt it in the box, and then you put your thing in there, and it hardens around it. That is usually done with CFCs. And canned air you use in electronics, that canned air to spray things off, that's usually CFCs. And most of it's in refrigeration. And they have that wonderful new machine that you call the Vampire, that you can stick in refrigeration units and it sucks it all out. And there have been some bills to try to get that as a requirement for when you have a dead car or a dead refrigerator to have those sucked out so that they aren't going into the atmosphere.
Does this work as a pilot program or a demonstration program or other school districts taking notice of what's happening in Eugene?
Actually, I get lots of calls. I spend probably 30% of my time dealing with calls from other states or other cities. And the Department of Energy considers it a pilot. And they are paying for the training of Watt Watchers and a case study on what we're doing in the district and custodial training. And they consider it a pilot. I brought a few things like that if anybody's interested in taking a look at that, or if you want me to send you information, models of how recycling can happen in schools. I've got that kind of thing written up. I didn't bring it all with me, but I'd be happy to send it to you.
Thank you.